So if you've ever thought, I know so much about nutrition, yet I'm feeling really lost about what to eat to get to a healthy weight, listen on to discover the 11 reasons nutrition is so confusing and why you feel stuck and the simple solution to do instead. Welcome to Joyful Eating. I'm your host, Jules Clancy, a former food scientist and winemaker turned cookbook author and health coach. I've discovered a simple way to have a joyful relationship with food without sacrificing pleasure or my waistline, and I can help you get there too. Listen on to find out how. So welcome to Joyful Eating, episode 164. So today we're going to be talking about the 11 reasons nutrition is so confusing. And first I'm going to share like the story behind this episode, and then we're going to look at the 11 reasons. And then I'm going to share with you what to do instead, my simple solution. And I'm also going to share with you a story, Marissa's story, so someone that I've worked with. Before we get to that, the best bite that I had, I've just wrapped up the Confident Cook Challenge, 21-day adventure with my students. And so we've been like sharing in the group what we've been eating. And I made just for lunch the other day, like a cucumber. It was like salad. So it was like diced up cucumber. It was a really hot day. Diced up cucumber, diced cold tofu. And then I tossed the tofu in tajin, which is this Mexican seasoning. It's salt, dehydrated lime juice and chili. And it's so good. So yeah, had that. And then I served it with some salsa, like this smoky chipotle salsa. I found this really fancy one at my supermarket. And it just like the combo of the cold cucumber, the chewy tofu with this little bit of spice to it and the salsa, like so good. So the story behind this episode, it was actually something that I've been thinking about doing for a while. And I actually did a live stream on Instagram and Facebook about it. And I was like, yeah, let's do a podcast episode, because it just reminded me, thinking about this, of how even though I had studied nutrition at university, for years and years, I felt really confused. And I actually got high distinctions in nutrition. So like I did really well. That was the best mark you could get for it. But it didn't actually teach me what to, like I was learning about, we learned about the function of protein and how why protein's important and, you know, different vitamins and things. But it didn't actually give me a good sense of what I wanted to, like what I should be eating to be at a healthy weight. And it's something that I hear from my clients so often is like, yeah, it's so confusing. Like there's so many conflicting messages out there in like, should I be plant-based? Should I be like carnivore? Like, should I be like low fat? Like you think about like even, and from like the nutrition community itself, like in the 80s, they were telling us to eat low fat. And like when I was studying nutrition at university, that was still the message, was that fat was bad because it, you know, was like, because it was fat, fat made you fat. And then there's like been the low carb thing lately, and like just so many, and the plant-based movement as well. Like it is really confusing. So I wanted to just like share an episode so that you understand why it's really confusing. And then also to empower you so that you can choose an alternative again. So you stop feeling stuck. So you stop feeling like, oh, I don't know what to do. So let's dive in. So the 11 reasons why nutrition is so confusing. So the first is like nutrition is actually a really young science. Like it's only being studied for the last a little over 100 years. So of course, it's something that's evolving, and our understanding of it is evolving. So that's the first reason. The next is that actually nutrition itself is super complex and really difficult to study. It's not like when you're studying physics or you're studying mathematics where you can just do simple experiments to try things out and learn from them. Like there are so many factors involved in nutrition and health and also like the time frame of like the compound effect of like someone eating like different things or different ways, not only for like weeks or months, but also like for the decades, like, and how that impacts our longevity. Like there's so much to it. So of course it's really difficult to study. And so of course it feels confusing. Like the messages that we're getting aren't, it's not like, you know, there's laws of the laws of physics. We don't have those that we can apply to nutrition. And then another reason why nutrition is so confusing is that one of the most common research tools that is used in nutrition are what are called food recall surveys. So they actually will do a survey of people and they'll get them to recall what did you eat or how many times did you eat chocolate in the last month, and actually use that research, use that data to then determine and try and study and understand things about how chocolate plays out in our health. But the thing is, if you think now, if someone asked you, how many times did you have chocolate in the last month? It's I've got no idea. Actually, I do know because I don't eat that much chocolate. But if it was something else, it would be I wouldn't remember. I don't remember what I had for breakfast this morning. I didn't have breakfast, but you know what I mean. It's difficult to remember. And so therefore the data that is collected is not necessarily really representative of what someone eats. And so then we're basing the findings on data that's a bit dodgy to begin with. So that's reason number three. Reason number four is that we ourselves are each human is different. So we each have different biochemistry. We each have different, for example, blood sugar control, something that's on my mind because I have diabetes and my blood sugar control is poor. So, and fascinatingly, I've actually seen some research that showed that, that was looking at the blood sugar response to different foods, and when they looked, and so they were getting people to eat potato by itself and then adding fat to potato and then adding fiber to potato and seeing how the different combinations impacted blood sugar. And interestingly, when they actually separated out the data and studied the in between people that had good insulin sensitivity and people who were diabetic, the people who had good insulin sensitivity, when they added fat to the potato, it actually made the insulin response even less. But the people who were diabetic, when they added fat to the potato, it actually made their blood sugar go worse and higher, which is really counterintuitive because normally you think that the fat would dim the response of the glucose response. But it's the way their bodies behaved was actually in the polar opposite, and that depended on the their baseline blood sugar, their insulin sensitivity. So that's really wild. That was really wild to me when I heard that. And so you can see there's people that you're studying, there's subjects that you choose in your test studies, that can have a huge impact on the outcomes that you get. So that makes it really confusing as well, because the research gets different results for what you would think would be similar studies, depending on the people that they use. That's number four. Number five is that a lot of research, one of the easiest types of research to do is when you're looking at correlation. So you go, okay, so in Japan, they eat a lot of rice, and then, Japanese people have a low incidence of heart disease. So therefore, and drawing conclusions on that kind of broader scale, which can be helpful for starting to get hypotheses. But the thing is that just because two things happen at the same place, so eating lots of rice and having low heart disease, doesn't mean that that's caused the rice has caused the heart disease. So that correlation doesn't actually mean, it can be useful, but it just means, okay, there's more to study there. You can't draw any conclusions from it until you know the mechanism. And so a great example that explains this is if you think about, you look at ice cream sales, and then you look at number of people that need to get rescued in the surf at the beach. So both of those, if you look over the year, both of those increase in summer. So you could go, ice cream sales are up and people that are drowning are up. So ice cream causes drownings, but of course, it's just because it's summer and there's more people at the beach. So yeah, that correlation does not equal causation is super important to understand. Next reason why nutrition is so confusing is, like I mentioned before, about differences between our biochemistry, but there's also differences in our gut microbiomes. So we each have we all have our unique gut microbiome, and so that can have an impact on how different food is processed in the body and how it impacts us. So someone that has sensitivity, like gluten sensitivity, they will respond in a different way to eating gluten and their health will be impacted in a different way to someone who doesn't have gluten sensitivity. So that's another factor at play. And then we also have different genetics as well. So it's like, so that's reason number seven. Just a quick break to say thank you for listening to Joyful Eating. I don't run ads on the podcast, so the only way this podcast grows is by word of mouth. So if you've received value from my work, I'd be so grateful if you took a few seconds to leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. I appreciate you. Now back to the show. And then reason number eight is, if you think about it, like nutrition, all research costs money, and a lot of the nutrition research is funded by the food industry. And I've certainly been working, I've worked for businesses that have funded a lot of research, and they've been wanting to sell breakfast cereal, and amazing. Like, they do this research and finding that breakfast cereal, like, people who eat breakfast are more likely to be healthy. Again, like, this is the correlation thing. And yeah, so like, there's that conflicting, there's that conflict of interest in nutrition research and where the funding's coming from. Number nine is that, like, it's not just food and what we eat that impacts our health. There are so many other factors at play. Like, are we smoking? Are we sedentary? Are we, are we active? Are we stressed all the time? Do we, are we sleeping properly? Like, all these things play into our weight and our appetite and our health and longevity. So, like, there's so many other things that can contribute that aren't nutrition. So that's another huge one. Then the other reason I think that nutrition is so can be so confusing is this, that a lot of the messaging is around this idea of what to eat. So it's like, you have these like good foods, the healthy foods, and we have these non-healthy foods. And so it's like, it's all the messaging is all around fat is bad or sugar is bad, broccoli is good, vegetables are plant-based is good. And the thing is that it's not that, like, what you eat does play into the health, like the health, but how much you eat of these foods is like has a huge, much bigger impact. So if you're having like one piece of pizza or two pieces of pizza, it's very different if you're having like a whole pizza to yourself. Like, and the impact on your health and your weight is really like that quantity piece is not spoken about as much. Like, it's just like, it's kind of weird that that's the way that nutrition has evolved at the moment. And I'm sure that will change in time, but that's being taught to my kids at school. Like, they're learning about these healthy foods and these not healthy foods, and no one's talking about, but you can have lolly snakes, or you can have crisps. It's like just having them in balance and not having too many of them is really the important thing. So that's number 10. And then number 11 is, when we're studying things, it's measuring the calories that go into our mouth. So if you're like, they're presenting people with the amount of food that goes, and they're weighing and measuring the calorie, the food, that's like what goes in their mouth. But then that doesn't take into consideration how different people metabolize food in a different way. So it doesn't, we know what goes in their mouth, but we don't actually have any visibility of what and how much is going into their bloodstream and into their cells and actually being available to be used by the body, like different people's bodies. And so, like, and the thing is, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what goes in your mouth. It's like what actually gets used by your body determines the impact of different foods and different quantities of food on your weight, your health, all the things. And like, there's this big gap between what we're studying and the important metric, which of course, like, it's really difficult to actually study, like, to be measuring blood sugar and all those sorts of things. It's much easier to just be like weighing out some protein and broccoli and putting it on a plate. Having this understanding of all those reasons that I've just mentioned just helps explain why nutrition is so confusing. And also, like, it's not that, the nutrition researchers are bad. It's like they've got this really complex thing that they're trying to make sense of and to give advice about. And, they're doing the best they can. I'm not like dissing on anyone that's any nutritionist. I think amazing, really challenging job to figure all this out. And so, like, of course it's confusing. And I think just having that sense of yeah, like, of course it's confusing, and being compassionate with ourselves is a very helpful thing to do. So, but what do we actually do about in our daily lives? Like, it's probably going to take hundreds of years for research, if they ever do figure out advice that's helpful for the general population, which they may not. They probably won't. So what do we do instead? Like, we can't wait hundreds of years. So what do we do? What do we use to guide us in terms of what to eat and how much to eat, like, here and now, until, you know, if we want to be healthy? And really, the only other option is, if you're not going to look for experts to tell you, because they can't, because it's too complex, is to go inward and to actually tune in to your body. Because it really doesn't matter how different food affects the general population or diabetics or women over 50. What really matters is how different foods and how different amounts of foods impact you. And the cool news is that you can actually figure that out, because you can study yourself. So what I recommend is, what to do about nutrition: stop expecting to get some simple, like, guidelines handed down to you, and just take ownership and to be empowered and start tuning in to your own inner wisdom and just trusting your instincts and just start paying attention to how food makes you feel. So you can start doing little experiments on yourself. So maybe if you think, like, oh, maybe bread isn't so good for me, try, like, yeah, okay, I'm not going to have bread for this a few days, and just see how that feels. And then when you introduce it back in, see how that feels. And of course, like, this isn't an exact science either, but at least it's a starting point to give you some indication of what works for you and what doesn't. And the cool thing is that the more you do this, the more you start paying attention to how different foods make you feel and different quantities make you feel, then you will naturally be drawn to eating more in the way that feels good to you, both in the moment and then also, you know, afterwards. And you'll have this inner, like, you'll be less driven, you'll have less desire for the foods that don't make you feel good. Like, yeah, sure, you might want to still include bread in your life, but you're not going to be, like, hankering after bread all the time if you know that it makes you feel bloated and gross afterwards. Like, you'd be like, oh yeah, it's not worth it for every day, but maybe occasionally, if you're at an amazing restaurant and they do, like, the best sourdough in the world, like, go for it. But you know that it's going to, you're able to make those trade-offs when you're being internally driven. And the other great thing about approaching nutrition from this perspective is, you don't have to read any more boring diet books. And also, what you'll find is that there's no need to rebel against, because you're not having these external rules. You're being driven by what feels good to you. So there's no, like, never like, oh, I need to quit, I'm completely, like, off this, I'm, you know, or rebelling against the rules, because you're just doing what feels good to you. So you naturally will want to keep doing what feels good to you. So yeah, that's what I really recommend, is starting to experiment with yourself and just paying attention to how food makes you feel in the moment, how it makes you feel a few hours later, longer term as well. And so, yeah, I promised you I was going to share Marissa's story. So Marissa was someone who worked with me in the Naturally Healthy Club. And before we worked together, like, she was really confused, even though she, like, knew so much about nutrition. She actually has a podcast where she interviews health experts, and, like, but she was feeling really lost in terms of, like, why is my weight a problem when I know so much about health? You know, she was really, like, constantly searching for the answer, like, is it intuitive eating? Is it no sugar? Is it no snacking? And she was trying different things. Is it restricting? Like, when is it all going to end? Like, when am I going to feel that clarity? And then after working with me in the Naturally Healthy Club, where I helped her, like, start to do this process of experimenting on herself and tuning into how food made her feel, after 6 months of doing that work together, she actually, her weight started to slowly come down, and she messaged me the other day, and she was like, she's actually back to her weight that's on her driver's license. So in the US, they actually put your weight on your driver's license, which is, like, that's weird. But yeah, she was like, oh my goodness, I'm, like, my weight is now what it says when I was 25. It's what's on my driver's license. And she sent me a message on Instagram. She was like, you know,
And she just had a photo of herself wearing this beautiful blazer and jeans. And she was like, I never imagined when we started that this blazer would button up again, or that these jeans would not only button, like I said, previously the jeans wouldn't button, but now they're actually a little bit baggy on her. She's like, getting dressed is so fun again. So this is what's on the other side of taking control of your own nutrition and starting to do your experiments, is actually getting to that place where you are able to lose weight naturally and feel really good in your clothes. And Marissa said, like, I feel so in control now, like no more restricting or being in mystery land. I feel happy, calm, and capable. So yes, your next step is to just start, like, give yourself permission to start paying attention and start doing some little experiments with yourself this week and see how that goes. And I would love to hear, if you're enjoying the podcast, if you're enjoying Joyful Eating and you're finding it helpful, then let me know. I would love to hear from you. Like, creating a podcast is a little bit like being in a vacuum sometimes. Just email me. It's jules@thestonesoup.com. I'll put that in the show notes. But yeah, I read and respond to every email that I get. So I would love to hear from you. It would mean so much to me. Okay, have a fantastic week and I will catch you next week.
Before you go, this is the best part. So if you enjoyed Joyful Eating, subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. And I'd love to send you a copy of my free recipe app, Stone Soup 6 Ingredients 20 Minutes. It's full of hundreds of easy whole food recipes, so delicious they'll satisfy even the biggest food snob. It's the perfect little resource to have right on your phone for those inevitable times when you're in the supermarket thinking, wow, what am I doing for dinner? It's available for both iOS and Android, and I add new recipes every week, so it's a really great resource to get for free. See the link in the show notes, or if you just Google Stone Soup and click on the free recipe app page, that'll give you the details of how to grab your free copy.